This is the Pride of Detroit podcast. It's the podcast from SB Nation.
Welcome to the podcast, PODcast, Pride of Detroit podcast. That's what it stands for. You're welcome to hate it. I don't care. We are Pride of Detroit, the SB Nation blog for the Detroit Lions Thanksgiving victors. What can we say? It's fantastic. Woo. Yes, indeed.
We own the Eagles.
We own the Eagles. We own the Raiders. We didn't even get to talk about that much. We own the Packers. We own the Bears. I'm just going to own
all four of them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's all four wins. Come on next week. Ryan Matthews, editor at Pride of Detroit, Ryan_POD, Jerry Mallory. What's your title, Jerry? You're like the multimedia content specialist.
I think maybe like video contributor.
Yeah, sure. Contributor. Yeah. I like contributor. Contributor at Pride of Detroit for videos and podcasting. Jerry NFL, I think it is.
Jerry Mallory NFL.
Chris Lemieux, writer for Pride of Detroit, at Malkovich Plan. No, I haven't changed it yet. I'm thinking about it still. I keep saying each week, it's like, hey, it's time to finally change it. And then someone posts like my stuff somewhere with the name, and I'm like, well, I don't want to change it because I want followers. Got to get new followers. What can we say about Thanksgiving? It was fun.
It was a good game. It was a laugher. I mean, the games that I've been at, they've either been losses or, you know, like you had the one game with the Bears, which was, it's fun, you know, when it's a close game, but it could be nerve-wracking. And then you had the Raiders, which was kind of close, but this one was just fun, man. It's good when you kind of sit there, like, after the first quarter, you know good and well that your team has won. So it was like a party, man. So I enjoyed it. We deserve to get a laugher.
Yeah, I think that's like the last thing we need to check off on this box of like all types of games to have. We've had every other type of game out there except a laugher win. And yeah, people were leaving with 10 minutes to go to get home to cook their turkeys. So that was kind of fun. That was funny because, Jerry, you were still there because you and I and Alex Arena, we were all at the game.
Yep.
And were you still there when those women stormed the field to try to tell you animal liberation now?
Yeah, that was crazy, man. I stayed just about for the whole game. I think yeah. I may have left around a 2-minute warning, but yeah, I was there for that whole situation. The funny thing about that was because I made jokes like earlier. I'm trying to think which game was it. I think it was the Minnesota Vikings game. I was so mad. I was like counting the security guards because like I had an urge to run up. One onto the field, and I don't know, I would have got on the field, don't know what I would have done. I wouldn't have attacked someone, but I was just so mad I wanted to run onto the field. So I actually counted the security guards during that Minnesota game, and I kind of made a joke with my wife and the people sitting near me. I said, man, it's too many security guards. You know, they're like spaced out every 5 to 10 yards. I wouldn't be able to make it onto the field. But yeah, sure enough, these groups, this animal rights group made it onto the field, so maybe I would have had a shot.
Well, I like two things that have come out of this. One is that, A, they did it in front of a stadium that was like a third full, right? Because everyone had left at that point. So whoever they were trying to reach, they were already home cooking a bird. So congratulations. Two was now all of a sudden we have this weird explosion where there are these cops who want to say, well, this is why we need to have we have to have off-duty cops be able to carry their firearms in NFL stadiums now. Because people were in a tizzy about this because this happened, like, you know, not far away from Paris.
And just how bad of an idea is that, Chris?
That is probably the worst. I didn't write my column, but I wanted to. This is probably the worst idea I've ever heard. Like, just to go on a rant here for a second, just imagine, like, someone in plain clothes suddenly drawing a pistol to try to stop a brawl in the upper bowl. You would have no clue who he is. And then there's another cop there who maybe has no clue who he is. And then there's maybe some alcohol involved. And then before you know it, you have cops just shooting up the place.
Yep.
No, no, no. It's the worst idea in the world. And then people panic. And I mean, you've been on those stairs in the upper bowl. Like that's people will fall and die.
Yeah. I mean, that's America's solution to everything.
More guns everywhere.
More guns. Like, more guns everywhere. More presence. More presence with guns. More people with guns.
Dude, we'll solve this.
We'll solve all of our problems.
I'm just not even trying to make it political here. I'm just saying that having firearms for plainclothes off-duty cops is probably a worse idea than having guns in daycares.
It's a pretty bad idea.
Well, there's just no place for him at a football stadium. I mean,
with that much alcohol flowing around.
Not
just for the person with the firearm, but for everyone else there. Like, everyone's drunk at NFL games. Everyone.
Yeah. Hey, how about we make it so that if you have a ticket in the family fun zone where no alcohol is allowed, maybe we can make exceptions for those people.
Right.
Yeah. I'm actually curious what happens in those family fun zones. I've never been around one. I don't know. Like, is it really that tame, or are there other people there who are just loud, obnoxious anyway? Or
I don't know. I've never been in one, but it's just because I'll go on StubHub if I'm looking to get some single game tickets real quick. I'll see that it's Family Fun Zone, and then always in parentheses it says no alcohol, and I'm just like, why would I buy that?
Well, I mean, granted, the alcohol is pretty expensive in Ford Field itself, but.
Yeah, but that's just like a sunken cost. I know that when I go to any sporting event, I'm going to buy whatever beverage they have for whatever price, so my hands are tied.
Yeah, I dropped money for a Moscow Mule. I hadn't had the Moscow Mule at Ford Field yet, so I decided to try it.
I don't know if they changed up the Family Fun Zone. I sat in the Family Fun Zone, I want to say, 6-7 years ago, because usually those tickets are cheaper, too. They didn't enforce it, man. It was people still, you know, cursing. I saw people drinking alcohol. So I don't know if they've beefed up the rules and regulation. But, no, last time I sat in it, it was just a regular section, man.
Not where I was expecting to start the podcast, talking about firearms at stadiums and the family fun zone and what it's like to sit there. But here we are, I guess.
Well, there is a lot to talk about the Philadelphia game, but at the same time, there really isn't.
We just put
a shellacking on them.
Yeah, the problem is because it was a Thursday game, we are now sitting at, what, nearly 5 days since the game was played. So whatever analysis is out there, we really can't analyze this game any further. Like, it's been beaten to death.
Mm-hmm.
I think the only thing that came out of this game that I was surprised about was that Chip Kelly wasn't fired at the 2-minute warning.
I think they would have if there was some type of way they could have made it happen. I'll say this much. If Martha Ford was the owner of the Eagles, I don't know if Chip Kelly would be here after that game.
No, let's say that let's play a quick little fun game. Let's reverse that score. Let's say it's 45-14 Eagles on home at Thanksgiving. Do you think she comes down and just cans Jim Caldwell right there on the spot? Because if there's anything I think that's happening with Martha Ford right now, a lot of what she has been doing, like, I think she's doing the right thing so far in how they've been conducting this GM search and, you know, the president and everything. But there's also a bit of a PR campaign underneath all of it to try to appeal to fans to keep their loyalty and to keep their season tickets. So with that in mind, you think she just cans Jim Caldwell right there and then on Thanksgiving?
I don't.
Yeah, she probably gives him a chance.
Yeah, I think that the Packer game might be still fresh in her 80-some-year-old mind, and I think Caldwell would still have his job.
Yeah,
it's an interesting thing though, because I mean, I agree, Chris. I mean, it seems like some of the things that she's done so far as of recent, I guess, have been really reactionary.
Well, it's just how the language she's been using every time I read these press releases she does about the fans and everything else. I mean, it is what the fans want to hear, but I think it's sincere too, but there is, you can't help but see a little bit. If you want to be really cynical about it, you can see the angle which she's going for, right?
That's an interesting point though, Chris. I agree with you. Like that whole letter deal that she sent and this and that. I think part of it, like you said, she does care about winning and the team, but part of it is her being a businesswoman and trying to, you know, preserve.
Yeah, she's got to preserve the brand here. Yeah.
I actually like that though, because I feel like at least she's trying. I think the old regime, it was kind of like, you know, the PC thing you should do or the thing you should say to kind of appease to the fans. We don't even get that much. Like Jim Caldwell, they asked him a couple weeks ago, like, well, what about the fans? You know, any other coach would have said, yeah, you know, I worry about the fans too. He was just so dismissive, you know, just saying he didn't care about what the fans thought. So even though she is probably doing some things to appease to her own pockets, I like that she's actually doing that. It kind of shows she has a pulse. You know, the old regime, they didn't even do that much. You can at least give me the courtesy of, you know, they say, if you're going to screw me over, at least give me a kiss first or whatever. at least she's giving us the kiss first.
Right. And I've laid into them about the 97.1 move, which was about saving face there, too, if you believe what CBS Detroit said about it, which was basically that the Detroit Lions wanted to control the message, which, again, they wouldn't be the first NFL franchise to try to control the message, because in general, the NFL can be very, the owners of the NFL can be very thin skinned about that kind of stuff.
Right.
But at the same time, too, like when your team is, I think in terms of value, the Detroit Lions are like 30th in the NFL, I believe. So, I mean, there's really, you can't really fault anyone if they're trying to get a little more money out of this venture, just given how moribund the Lions have been historically.
Oh, yeah. Money.
Sorry.
Money over everything. MOE.
MOE?
Yeah.
Cream? Yeah. Cash rules everything around me? Yeah.
Dollar bill, y'all.
I'm sorry, Chris. I was sidetracked. The Philadelphia, this is like late breaking news. I know this isn't basketball. The Philadelphia, not Eagles, the Philadelphia 76ers.
Holy God, they won.
They won a football
game. They won.
A basketball game.
And they beat the Lakers.
I kind of got, when I saw that, I had a little brief heart palpitation.
Oh, my. That's even funnier that they beat the Lakers in the midst of Kobe's retirement farewell tour.
Let me pose a question. Would you guys have rather watched that game or the game that was on last night? Because those just both had to be exercises in futility.
Are you talking about Warriors-Jazz? Are you talking about
Browns? Oh, no. I'm talking about Browns-Ravens, because that game was so incredibly difficult to watch.
Yeah, I wrote about it in The Hangover today, which is Tuesday. I said that I wanted to not pay attention to that game at all, and I made it a good three quarters before my Twitter feed blew up and everyone was saying, you need to be turning in right now. And I'm like, I really don't want to turn in to watch Matt Schaub throw a pick six. But sure enough, I did, and the final play paid it off. So.
Yeah. Well, so this is the thing that I was kind of thinking about when you brought up the idea if the score would have been reversed on Thursday for the Lions, if Martha Ford would have done anything about Jim Caldwell's position with the Lions. You see, I mean, if you want a franchise, if you want an organization that has managed to be worse than the Lions, it's the Cleveland Browns. And it's their lack of stability and it's their lack of any type of continuity, keeping one coach in position to actually foster an environment where there can be like a culture that actually becomes like a part of the team. And there's such a high turnover rate with that position, so you just can't get anything moving. Like,
you can't get anything done. Yeah.
Right. And I mean, Gruden made a point about it last night while I was watching the game a little bit. And, you know, he just said, you know, something along the lines of, you know, you can bring in as many quarterbacks as you want, but when you have new offensive coordinators, you know, just when there's a revolving door, you have all these coordinators coming in, bringing in new blocking schemes, new routes, new snap counts. I mean, it's just like when you can't get any kind of when you can't get any type of consistency, stability, if you can't have anybody even at the top. So I don't know. I don't want to say this, but I'm kind of like warming up to the idea of keeping Caldwell here.
Well, not to retread the thing again that I wrote about four reasons to keep Jim Caldwell, because I hear you use that word continuity that I brought up in there.
Mm-hmm.
But I would, this is, I think, a point I cut out of that article. Jim Caldwell has been an NFL head coach for a grand total of 5 years. Like, he got 3 years in Indy and he's going to have two here in Detroit. So you really don't know what a long-term plan with Caldwell looks like in the end. And his only college head coaching gig was with Wake Forest. And I'm going to tell you right now, it doesn't matter how many years you have at Wake Forest, no one has success at Wake Forest. Wake Forest is just a very bad college to really recruit and have people play football at. Speaking of the quarterbacks for the Browns, like, this kind of goes to the problems they're having that you're mentioning there, Ryan. Like, Josh McCown's basically done for the year, from what I understand, and Johnny Manziel is still not going to be starting. And, like, that's insane.
Yeah, I mean, we want to complain about Eric Ebron getting drafted 10th overall. I mean, think of all the first round draft picks that the Browns have spent on quarterbacks just in the last decade.
Traded up for Johnny Manziel.
Didn't they trade up to get Brandon Weeden too?
Yeah, like it's nice to know that for as like this is. See, I had this argument with someone too about like, well, you're a Lions fan, so you should feel sympathy for the Browns. And I'm like, this is kind of the Midwestern experience. The Midwestern experience is you recognize that everyone is crap, and but you still shit on everyone or all your neighbors around you for being worse than you. And that extends to football here too. Yeah, the Lions have been bad, but it hasn't been the dysfunction that the Browns have been having since they came back into the NFL.
Yeah, that's true. The point you made about Caldwell, and I don't know, maybe I'm starting to warm up to him too. I kind of thought about this. I was watching the Seattle-Pittsburgh game, and Mike Tomlin, he had some calls. I guess you could look at him as questionable if whether you should go for it or not toward the end.
Oh, I'm all for it. I love that he goes for it. I love that he does two-point conversions, but I also like the math inherent to those risks.
Yeah, I'm with that too. And so it was one point, though, where he decided to kick the field goal. They were, like, at the five-yard line. And I was just thinking, if this was Caldwell that decided to, you know, kick the field goal instead of going for it, I mean, this would have been the biggest thing that we were talking about, you know.
Right.
So sometimes I just think, you know, someone's reputation, it kind of gets overblown. Like, we have this idea that Caldwell is horrible at game managing. So anything he does, we're going to just automatically say that it's a bad decision. On the other hand, a guy like Tomlin, who we all praise, and I think he's great too. You know, he makes a call that's kind of questionable, and he doesn't really get that much slack.
Right.
So maybe I'm warming up on Caldwell too.
You know what it is? I think it's because
we kind of run with theories, you know?
Yeah, I think they're similar. I think the difference there is just Tomlin gets that shield because it's the Steelers and he has the Super Bowl ring and he has Ben Roethlisberger and everything else. So yeah, like there's a lot of things we do with coaches in the NFL that sometimes is just very frustrating. And I mean, I think we have a question this week is like what. It was for someone else. We'll get to that question very shortly, though. But the idea is, like, what has Caldwell done that's really that special? Because he doesn't call plays, and he's not really putting systems in place. But, I mean, there's something to be said about a guy who's just managing everything right there, right? Like,
yeah.
He seems to really just have a good pulse on it all. Like,
right.
when things are going right, like, we can again, have our anguishes with him and our frustrations with him, like kicking the field goal down 7 in the Bears game, which is, I think that's, you know, something you're talking about right there, Jerry.
Right.
But, like, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't think a replacement level coach is going to be that much of an upgrade over Jim Caldwell.
Yeah, it depends on who's available, too, you know.
Yeah.
Just an upgrade just to say someone is different, or what,
like,
if there's no one out there that's that quality, you know,
like,
as opposed to Caldwell.
Like, is like the Lions' first option from when they hired Jim Caldwell, because that wasn't their first option. Their first option was Ken Whisenhunt.
Right
now, what would you say? Would you dump Caldwell if you knew that you were getting Ken Whisenhunt back?
No.
No, but I don't know. The Tennessee situation is just really bizarre.
But
there's something to be said about Caldwell, though. I mean, what was one of the biggest complaints that Lions fans had when Schwartz was here? It was that the inmates were running the asylum, right? It was that there was no discipline, the unsportsmanlike conduct penalties.
Right.
I mean, last year, granted, you know, I'm sure Sue had his fair share of unsportsmanlike conduct penalties, but how many have you really seen from the Lions this year? And, I mean, if you want to bring in a replacement level coach, I mean, in Caldwell's first year, he goes 11-5. And granted, you know, we had the tough start we did this year, but look at what we're doing. We're winning, beating Green Bay, you know, at Lambeau, Oakland, Philadelphia on Thanksgiving. I mean, he's showing resolve, and at least, you know, he's doing what Martha Ford is saying. Martha's saying, like, I'm not going to put up with losing. And I know these fans aren't going to put up with losing. So, you know, it's good to show. It's good to see that Caldwell is showing that kind of resolve.
The more I resisted it so heavy at first, but the more I watch, the more I think there is something to be said about how bad the Joe Lombardi thing was, as just a plug on this whole thing, as something of just backing up everything. Because it just seems each week, as you get further away from the Joe Lombardi game plan, You take the defense off the field more, which allows them more rest. And the offense just seems to be working. Just like we have a run game in Detroit. We have a run game.
Yeah. We have some semblance of a run game, at least. I mean,
enough to get a first down.
Right. I mean, and it's so nice. I mean, I know I've been on this podcast and I blasted Mayhew, but that draft class with Warford and Theo Riddick and Ziggy Ansah, I mean, it's looking like and Darius Slay. I mean, those four names alone, Sam Martin in that draft too. I mean, he hit a home run there. So
yeah, Ziggy Ansah.
Theo Riddick has been a revelation, man.
Yeah. Like, yeah, that's Theo Riddick's been great. Ziggy Ansah, like, there is a Stephen White article up about Ziggy Ansah, and he's like, I was saying to you guys off the air, like, what are the chances? What are the chances if Ziggy Ansah continues to grow like this and you give up a generational talent like Ndamukong Suh and you just happen to have this other guy come out of the back, out of nowhere?
It's scary. The key to me is, and he's beaten double teams this year. As good as he is, I just really want them to pair him with one more force on that line. Mm-hmm. That's what I was looking forward to, seeing Ziggy kind of step into his own while Suh was here, because then you're getting to a point where you're kind of picking your poison. And you know, you'd have either been leaving Ziggy single checked or Suh. So I just think now, until we get one more guy you really have to account for, teams are going to really start to try and neutralize him. But that just speaks to how far he's come. Like we were even saying, Chris, he's just learning how to play football. It's scary.
He started playing football in 2010. Like, yep. People need to remember this whenever you talk about Ziggy Ansah. He had not seen a gridiron until 2010 at BYU.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Like, he's got everything he needs.
And it's scary, just the leaps and bounds that he's taken. I mean, because he was one player that I was unsure of what kind of season he would have without Suh and without Fairley, right, and without that kind of push on the interior of the line. I was wondering what he was going to be able to do. And I think it goes a lot hand in hand with what you said, Chris. I mean, Ansah looked good in the beginning of the season. He was better. I think we can all agree he was better in run defense than he was in terms of
pass rush.
He was
still getting sacks, though.
Right.
Yeah.
He was getting sacks, but there was a lot of times, especially in the Seattle game, where he got caught going upfield too much.
Right, but at the same time, that's against Russell Wilson, and Russell Wilson's just sneaky like that.
Sure, I'll give you that. But I think my point is that I think kind of like, you know, circling back to this idea of Lombardi's offense out, Cooter's offense in, and now we have a chance for the defense to actually, you know, get a blow on the sideline, get a chance to get their rest and, you know, get back out there.
Well, the rest is so important. This is one of the unseen things when a team's constantly going three and out. It just means the defense is just still out there and that you're losing the time possession battle. And it just means the defense is out there and out there. They're putting their hands and the hips more and more. And they're just, by the end of the game, they're just tired and they're letting up just really dumb plays.
Yeah, the way you score is sometimes just as important, man. Like you guys were saying, to see them have these sustained drives, you know, 9 plays, you know, taking up 6-7 minutes, because, you know, it's nice to see a 70-yard bomb of a touchdown, but then your defense is getting right back on the field. But we're having, like, long, sustained drives, you know, not fluky plays.
What was that drive to start the half in the Thanksgiving game? Was that, like, 8 minutes?
Yeah, it was great. It was about seven, eight minutes. I was actually in the concessions line that whole time, which kind of sucked, but I was watching it on the screen. They just were charging down the field, man, and that's the type of offense you want. And I know some people, the Eagles suck and this and that, but we faced teams, even last year when our offense struggled, it would be like a bad defense versus the Lions, who had like a bad offense, and that bad defense would kind of hold us in check. So it's just encouraging to see whether it's a good or bad defense having these sustained drives.
Yeah, a lot of people are kind of buying in and saying that the Lions are, like, really hot right now, which kind of brings us to the Green Bay game, because I don't know how to read this game, to be honest, because, like, we can talk about the Lions surging right now, but don't forget, it was on the Packers to actually lose that game at the very end. Yes, the Lions basically did everything in their power to hand the game over to Green Bay, and you could argue that maybe there shouldn't have been some of those situations near the end, but at the same time, Mason Crosby did miss that kick. Like, that wasn't blocked or anything else. Mason Crosby did miss it, but I don't know how to read this one because, like, the Packers are just looking real down right now. But at the same time, like, every time a team's really down, you're just kind of, like, watching it terrified. When a team is down in the NFL, you are watching very closely. And you're just like, this team could pick itself back up at any moment.
Yeah, man. Do theory, you know?
Yeah. Like, it's just a regression. I like to think of it as, like, regressing to the mean. Just like, it's like what the Lions did. The Lions were just terrible and terrible and terrible, and everyone was waiting for that one game, and then it finally snapped into being with the Green Bay game. So I don't know what to do with the Packers. They look like they're going southbound real fast, but hard to tell where they're going to turn it around.
We've seen them play them pretty good, too, even the past few years where, you know, they've won 12 or 13 games. We've played them pretty good at Ford Field the last – I would say 4 or 5 seasons. I think 2012 we lost, but 2011 and 13, 14. So even,
I was there for 14, yeah.
So, yeah, even years where the Packers have been good and, you know, we've been a varying degree of mediocre to good, we've had success against them here. So, like you say, you're kind of waiting for that ball to drop, so to speak. Them, like the Packers, starting to look like them old, their old selves. But I think we'll win this one. I think it's going to be close, but I think we'll eke it out.
I think it's going to be close. I won't make any understanding of the finish, though. Ryan, how do you feel so far about Packers-Lions?
I think the thing I'm most upset about is that we're not going to get color rush jerseys.
I know, man. What's going on? We didn't even get throwbacks for Thanksgiving. What the heck?
We got
Where's
nothing.
The love?
Yeah,
Where's the love? We didn't get anything. We just got a stinking game. That's all we got.
Yeah, stinking
stupid,
game.
A stupid win. Who cares about that?
We got a game, a win, and a Big Sean concert. That's all we got.
That was a snooze fest, man.
I don't mind Big Sean. You don't like him?
Oh, I mean, he was fine. He's fine with me, but he was not performing to, like, Big Sean fans. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. I feel that half
the audience is like over 50, and it was funny to me just looking at people kind of sitting there looking like, okay, you know, he wasn't playing in his crowd.
No,
he's definitely a younger crowd.
Yeah,
you know,
so I feel like audience, maybe he would have been more at home at like a Pistons game or something. You know?
Yeah, you know, or even like if you can catch the Tigers on the weekend, sometimes you kind of get like a younger crowd out there.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the Lions games, man, that's older.
It's
older
a tough crowd. Yeah.
Construction worker guy is not particularly going to be a Big Sean fan. It was cool. I enjoyed it.
It was better than Luke Bryan at the halftime of the Cowboys game. Oh my lord,
Luke!
It was terrible. But I don't know. The Packers. I don't know. I don't know what to say about the Packers game. I'm just excited to kind of see what kind of adjustments the Packers are going to make. I guess. I know the big talk. Around the Lions locker room, it seems like, and all the news stories is the defense focusing on stopping the run game and stopping Eddie Lacy, which I think is kind of interesting because all you have to do to stop Eddie Lacy is put, you know, a plate of food in front of him.
Right. Just put the food behind the line of scrimmage and he won't proceed.
Tackle for loss by roast beef.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, I think last week I was watching, they were the late game with the Bears. And he was running hard, and I feel like, you know what? The only reason he's running so hard is I swear that Mike McCarthy said he couldn't have Thanksgiving dinner unless he put in a performance.
That's right.
He's got to put a Milky Way bar on like a stick on the end of his helmet.
Did that late game give out? Remember how Madden do the turkey legs? Did the late game give out any food? Maybe that's what he was running for.
Mm.
Maybe he was going for player of the game.
Yeah, they did. Because I remember it was Tracy Porter. Is right. Tracy Porter, the corner for the Bears. It was him and Jay Cutler, and they were eating turkey legs with. I can't think of the sideline reporter for the NBC games, but.
Yep. That explains it. That's why Lacy was running so hard, man. He wanted to be player of the game. Get that turkey leg.
This feels so awful to like make fun of him like that, but I mean, you know, we got to do it in a rivalry.
Call a spade, man. The dude is fat.
Well, I mean, this is like when I wrote my last Green Bay recap and we had the Packers fan come in who was just so mad that I pointed out that there are more bars than groceries in Wisconsin. Like, if you're going to be mad about that, then you're going to be even more mad listening to this podcast. So I got nothing for you.
Yeah, I'm also interested. I think another thing, too, is just aside from what adjustments the Packers are going to make on offense, the Lions have gelled so well. I mean, aside from the Raiders game, I guess the Raiders game was a little bit disjointed. That was a weird game in general, but... they looked really good on offense against the Eagles, and say what you want about the Eagles' defense. Calvin looked like Calvin again, and Stafford looked really comfortable. you know,
he's really adjusted really well.
And, yeah, he's adjusted really well to, I think, becoming a part of that offense. I think something I read earlier in the week about the relationship that Cooter and Stafford have is that they're able to kind of like bounce ideas off of one another, and that that Stafford's really stepped up to the plate in kind of making himself more accountable for going out there and reading defenses and making adjustments at the line and running the offense kind of under his terms with like Cooter's guidance, I guess you could say. Right.
Can I say the one thing that's impressed me about Stafford here, and like I did a lot of banging on Stafford early in the year, and I still think like his best is kind of behind him, but I will say this about Stafford. Like, this has been what, like, I'm trying to remember the Oakland game. It's not fresh in my mind, but has this been two games now where I've been watching Stafford and I'm like, you're not doing any dumb shit. Like, the Eagles, like, Thanksgiving was depleted of at any point where, because they were getting pressure to Stafford now and then, but he wasn't trying to, like, you know, trying to throw as defenders were, like, trying to tear him down and thus force a fumble or something. He wasn't doing anything like he was getting some pressure to him, but he wasn't panicking under that. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, he wasn't doing,
yeah.
he wasn't making dumb decisions.
He's been pretty clean. And like, you know, these athletes don't really give you much. They're not completely forthright. So when they do these post game interviews, you got to read between the lines. Mm-hmm. So I was listening to Stafford after the Eagles game, and I think he kind of said some things to me that was, you know, he was giving props to Cooter, and at the same time, he was kind of like saying what Lombardi didn't do. One thing he mentioned was that he appreciate what Jim Bob does because Jim Bob trusts him. He said, well, you know, it's good having a guy in here that trusts me. So in other words, you know, allowing him to, like Ryan said, come up with things on his own, handcuffing them, because that was the thing. When Caldwell and when Lombardi came, it was like, well, we're here to fix Stafford. And so their whole thing was, we got to get the completion percentage up. We got to cut the interceptions down. I think by doing that, though, they handcuffed them. They were essentially saying, we don't trust you, and we're going to fix you. Whereas Jim Bob is like, well, you know, here are your strengths. Let's play to the strengths. We're not going to try to change who you are. We're just going to play based on what you're good at. So I think just that alone is why Stafford's playing a lot better. He's got a coordinator that trusts him. I think Linehan trusted Stafford to an extent, too.
Yeah.
He knew he would throw interceptions, mm-hmm. but he trusted him to make big plays, too.
That's something, too, real quick, Chris. That's something,
yeah, sure.
too, that goes along with, like, Ron Prince, like, coming in and working with the offensive line. I've read things where it says, we're trying to put guys in the position to do what they do best.
Right.
And
not the other way around.
Right. It's not – we're not trying to force an offense onto our personnel. We're trying to figure out what our personnel does best. And if it's Theo Riddick catching the ball, he might be the best receiving back in the NFL. We're going to throw the ball to him. Yep. Stafford, we're going to let Stafford get the ball out quick, and we're going to let him even like sit back in the pocket sometimes. We're going to give him the chance to kind of do what he can do. And it's good to see the coaches realize that we need to play to the personnel's strengths, not play to the strength of what we think we can do as an offense.
Right. They're not, and that's the other thing too, they're not changing out all these parts nonstop. I will say this about Jim Bob Cooter, and it might just be this when it comes to him and Stafford. They just might be birds of a feather, because if I can quote something that was from Monday, I think it was from the Monday press conference, Jim Bob's opening statement was, and I quote, cut it loose, let's go. That is a very Tennessee thing to say. Stafford himself, a Texas guy, like, I think they just speak the same language. Just like, yeehaw, let's just get this off the gut here now. Let's get this barbecue started.
I got the lingo down.
Mm-hmm. I have somebody who is friends with Mr. Tom LeWand. And he actually had Thanksgiving dinner with him on Saturday. And he was talking about the first time that he introduced Jim Bob Cooter to Stafford when he first came here to be, you know, the quarterback's coach. And they introduced one another, and Stafford said, so what do you want me to call you? Jim? You want me to call you Bob? You want me to call you Cooter? And then Jim Bob's just like, nope, call me Jim Bob. What do you want me to call you? Matt? Matthew? He's like, Matthew. All right, cool.
Yeah.
So maybe they just have this understanding of, like, we're gonna call each other what it is. We're gonna be on this like working relationship. We're both southern boys, and we're both gonna cut it loose and let it go, right?
Yeah, I mean, like it. Seems to work out, and that's always been Stafford's kind of mentality. Everyone talks about him as a gunslinger, so you know we're gonna have that stereotype. Just play with it, I guess. You know, just let it on out there. Anything else we need to tackle here, or should we get on to questions?
I think we should get on to questions.
Do you have a Wally's World this week, or are you good?
No, I don't have a Wally's World. He's way too invested in Jordan Zimmerman and
JC.
Jay-Z. Yeah.
Shout out to the Tigers for getting that.
Yeah, shout out to Al Avila for kind of not missing a beat. I mean, he's made some really
he had to cut his
really, really good moves. You know what? He never wanted to draft his son in the first place. So
that was
one of the things at the very beginning of the offseason where he said, you know what? I think Alex is going to find better money somewhere else.
And I guess it's with the White Sox. And now he's saying, I can't wait to beat the Tigers. So, hey, bring it.
Yeah. All right. Let's see you swing against let's see you swing against left-handed pitchers, Alex.
Yeah.
Questions.
Yeah, let's get to some questions. I'm sorry. I was just waiting for you to cough again there, Ryan. You need to get that looked at.
Sorry. I know. I tried to run out of bug tonight at basketball. Yeah. But
you, I mean, you've been doing that for about a month. We gotta figure out. It sounds like just, you know, you might just need to clean up the room or something. Or just, I don't know. Like, I'm worried for you. I just want to make sure your throat's all right.
I might need to get some lavender in here.
There you go. Lavender and garlic, man.
All right, we should get to some of these. I'm going to take the one from Twitter first. Cookie, which is actually someone with a mail, like Cookie991, and it's actually a mail, like a male avatar with a Liverpool background. So it's not exactly the first person. If you tell me the name Cookie in a vacuum, that's not the picture I'm thinking of when I look at Cookie.
Maybe it's like Cookie. How do you spell Cookie?
No, just exactly how you would spell it, like cookie, as in like the thing you eat, a cookie.
Like a G.
Yeah. So
maybe he meant like cookie, like he's crazy or something.
No. It's spelled exactly like cookie. It's like a chocolate chip.
I'm trying to defend you, brother. Sorry.
He asks, is a W on Thursday night better than any other possible Christmas present this year?
No, I think beating the Packers twice would be the best Christmas present.
But I mean, that's what he's asking.
Oh, I thought you meant last Thursday.
No,
sorry.
No. He's talking about Thursday night against Green Bay.
You know what? Sorry. I was being a little cookie. I agree with you.
Yeah. And you know, the thing like, Stafford, he mentioned this, at the beginning of the year, he said he was sick of splitting with Green Bay. You know, we would win at Ford Field, lose there. So we got half of it done. Yeah. It would be great, man. Just to, even if we, just, you know, we can go 5-11, and I wouldn't be happy about that. But the fact that we beat the Packers twice, that's why even when we were 1-7, and it looked like we're going to get the number one pick, like just beat Green Bay, man. So yeah, definitely, it would make the season, no matter how it turned out, it would be like a silver lining to however the season ends if we swept Green Bay.
I can think of some pretty good Christmas presents though. But I will say this, like, I don't care like where we end up as far as like draft stuff. I've been saying that for months now though. Like, it's just fun watching this team get some good wins, and this draft isn't that important right now anyway. So, you know, but I will also say too, I'm kind of worried about the opposite, that if we keep winning enough, everyone's going to start talking about like maybe getting into the playoffs, and the heart's going to be broken on the last day because there's just too much in motion to get the Lions into a wild card.
Yeah.
And people are just going to sit around and complain about the Seahawks game for a whole offseason.
Guys, don't do that to yourself. Enjoy winning.
Yeah, enjoy this in the vacuum.
One week at a time.
Don't look at the playoff machine. Don't look at anything out there. Oh, I know the NFC is bad right now outside of like three teams that are like leading these divisions right now. Actually, only two, because I just realized the Packers are one of those division leaders, and they're, yeah.
Well, I mean, how sweet would it be to beat the Packers twice and cost them the NFC North?
Yeah, we're basically giving the North to the Vikings at that point. Yeah. So they can hold on to it.
And like Jerry said, if we finish 5-11, but we beat the Packers twice and cost them the NFC North, I would love to taste Aaron Rodgers' tears.
They'd probably still get the wild card just by how bad the rest of the NFC is, but yeah. I mean, just to not have them hang up a division banner would be great.
I'll say this, man. If we win these next two games, I probably will start going down that route. That whole what if, that whole train. I'm telling you, like I know how my fandom is. I think if we win this game and then we go, what's our next? Is our next game St. Louis or New Orleans? I always forget. But
I don't think
after Green Bay. But if we beat Green Bay and then we go and win that road game, put us at 6-7, I think I'm gonna be in full. I'll be in full blown like.
Okay, yeah, it
is. Jerry, you're doing it. You're doing it right
Rams,
now.
It's Rams, Saints, 49ers, Bears.
Because see, then the next game we can get to 500. I'm gonna go there, man.
Yeah, this is ultimate hashtag Lions football here. Is that we're going to have all these nice wins, and all we're going to be able to do is bitch about how we got left out because we got dicked over in the Seahawks game.
That's the slowest Lions. That's the slowest hashtag Lions football burn that I can think
of.
Yeah,
whole season.
That's a whole season burn. That's something you got to go to the clinic
to
get checked out.
Fantastic. Wow.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to some more questions. That was good. Let's see here. Let's do a serious one. Big Haircut asks, is Jim Bob Cooter really doing anything special, or is he just using the player's strengths to his advantage, you know, like any decent offensive coordinator would do? I mean, we can say that, but how many offensive coordinators out there aren't able to play to their players' strengths?
Joe Lombardi?
Mr. Lombardi.
Well, I mean, I'm going to say this about Cooter. I don't think there's any way he stays an offensive coordinator, at least with the Lions. They will want to bring in probably a more experienced offensive coordinator for whoever is head coach next year. But, I mean, it's still good for him. I think he's – I mean – I don't know what else you can expect from him where he has to rejigger the playbook mid-season to work for what he has. Like, these guys during the offseason work on these playbooks nonstop, and then they practice it during the summer. Like, he basically has been having to do everything on the fly, working with Lombardi's notes and what's been drilled into these guys' heads already. And he's still making it work. And he's got a run game working, which, like, yeah, he's playing to those strengths, but you can talk about a lot of other offensive coordinators in this league that aren't doing that.
I think sometimes when something is so bad, and I don't know if we're going to – someone mentioned Michael Olah in one of the questions too, so I'm not trying to steal that question's thunder, but sometimes when something is so bad, you know, when there's a change, that change could just be mediocre, and that mediocre change looks phenomenal. And I think that's the case with, like, Lombardi was so bad, you know, and just so bent on – forcing players to be what they weren't. You know, at this point, I don't know if Jim Bob Cooter is just adequate, just like your average offensive coordinator, or if he's doing his phenomenal job just based on the fact that he's replacing someone that inept. You know, it's kind of a disservice to him, because when you replace something that's horrible, you don't know that new guy is that great or just that much different than the person that sucks. So
yeah, absolutely.
Did I talk about this question?
No, you didn't. That's why we had the awkward pause.
Well, it was a pregnant pause, okay?
Okay.
No awkward pauses on this podcast.
I ain't getting nobody pregnant. Don't look at me.
No, I think I kind of talked about it earlier. I think that, you know, Cooter and the new offensive line coach, Ron Prince, they've done a good job of just playing to the player's strengths. And I mean, who's to say, I guess what you said earlier, Chris, I mean, who's to say that if Caldwell doesn't keep his job, maybe the whole regime stays, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, maybe Austin probably interviews for a new job. Can I just say, though, how weird it is to sit here and praise Ron Prince? Because I'm a college football fan, and I remember everything he did at the college level, and it wasn't good. And yet I have to sit here and praise Ron Prince for the job he's doing with the offensive line.
Maybe the praise only goes so far, though, because it's been a reoccurring theme ever since Warford got hurt in the Washington preseason game, and back to that buzzword continuity and getting the same five guys out there on the offensive line week to week and building that chemistry and whatnot and finally
it's
getting
hard to
some stability. Yeah, yeah, it's hard to tell. I mean, there's
small,
so many moving pieces,
small
sample
size.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
we'll just have to see if we get a chance to see. Let's see. Let's get a couple more questions here. Do you want to take a serious question or an easy one?
Let's go easy.
Let's go easy. Let's do this one. This one kind of requires Alex, but I'll ask it anyway. TJW Go Blue asks, other than pizza, what does Alex eat? Everyone except Alex is also allowed to answer this question. I think we should answer it for Alex because he's not here, because he was a bum and had to jet out.
I think I'm the only person here who's ever... Well, did you guys get food at the game together?
No. What had happened was we went to Greektown before the game. We went to Pegasus, and they drove us out, and they said, we are not open until 11 a.m.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll take my business somewhere else then.
Yeah, we just went over to just get beers. Like, that was basically it, because, like...
That's a good supplement for food.
But I don't understand, like... The game is at 12:30. People are wanting to go in at 11 because I tried to get in closer to like 12:30, and it was a nightmare at Gate A. So I understand why people get in early. So why wouldn't you open just a little early so people can eat? The non-Greek restaurants in Greektown were open, but the Pegasus for some reason only opened at 11.
Well, I think I'm the only one in this three-man booth right now who's actually had a meal with Alex then.
Okay.
So, what was the original question? What does Alex eat besides pizza?
Yeah.
He ate a burger, which is basically a sandwich. So if we're going to go like the Italian sub thing, the guy isn't really about his pizza as much as you guys think he is.
Yeah, and apparently Morgadu in the comments is saying, wasn't he caught slumming with hot wings one time?
I mean, you know what? I ordered some boneless wings that I'm pretty sure he ate. I can't confirm or deny that just because he's not here and I had a lot of beer at that wrestling event. I had a lot of beer at that wrestling event we went to. But I'm pretty sure he ate some wings. And even if he says he didn't, I'm pretty sure he did. You can't trust Alex when he comes to.
He definitely wanted to eat something Greek too, because I mean, like, we could have gone to one of those places that was like the Detroit Pizza there, like the Detroit Deep Dish was right there staring at us. That place was open right across from the Pegasus. And he's like, no, I want to go to Pegasus. I want to have Greek food. So obviously, he wanted Greek food over pizza in that
situation. His pizza loyalty is not as strong as we initially expected.
Yeah, yeah.
No, yeah. For some guy who screams pizza over everything, I mean, I don't think he's really about that.
Dedication to the cause is a little weak.
Shame.
Is a hot dog a sandwich?
Oh, I was about to say, because you threw that whole hamburger is a sandwich in here, and I almost called you out for that, and now you just had to start this up.
I don't get
philosophical on us now.
I don't want to even begin to start this.
All right. I'll leave it alone.
Yes, please. Like, we're going to have nothing in the comments for this podcast except people arguing about the hot dog sandwich question now.
A piece of meat between two pieces of bread? Is that a sandwich?
It's not no, we're not doing this. We're not doing this, Ryan. You can't make me.
All right,
Let's do another food question because I have this right here before we get to the... We've only got a couple questions left.
I like how we're calling them easy and hard questions.
Yeah, one forces us to make effort. The other is just, you know, kind of coming from the gut. It's guy stuff, I guess. What is your idea? This is from Tough Links. What is your idea of a perfect breakfast?
Ooh.
I mean, I love breakfast, but many times than not, I will just go and like get a sausage egg McMuffin. I do like breakfast sandwiches. I like making them fresh when I have the time. Like, if I have a bagel or, like, a biscuit at home that I can, I will totally cut that thing open, put scrambled eggs and homemade sausage not homemade sausage, but you know what I mean, just sausage I cook at home, and, like, a little bit of cheese on it, like, and make my own breakfast sandwiches. Like, those are fantastic.
Okay, I can dig that. What about you, Jerry? You a breakfast guy?
Oh, man. Huge breakfast guy, breakfast connoisseur. I'm going to go with French toast, homemade French toast, a big slab of bacon, you know, good half pound to a pound worth of bacon. And then I've got world-famous eggs, man. Like, the scrambled eggs I make with cheese, I could probably open up a restaurant. So
you do omelets?
I do omelets. Mm. I got a little secret I do when I make my eggs. So I'm going to say French toast, big old thing of bacon, and Jerry Mallory's famous cheese eggs.
Cheese eggs. Are you a fan of the Frank's Red Hot on scrambled eggs or no, Jerry?
I'll do that sometime, or I'll do a side of salsa. It's good. I'll do sour cream. So, no, those are my potatoes. I'm sorry. If I got some potatoes, I'm going to add that to my list too. So I got my, I'm telling you, I'm a big breakfast guy. So French toast, bacon, eggs, and like a hash brown with like a little sour cream.
Now you got me thinking about omelets, because like down south, I made an omelet one time with some leftover pulled pork.
Mm.
And I didn't use the Franks there, but being in the south as I was using... Actually, I can't remember if it was Tabasco that day, because I switch sometimes with my hot sauce and the eggs. Sometimes it's Tabasco. Sometimes I like it a little thicker, and I will go for the sriracha.
Oh, okay. I can dig that.
I can dig it.
I'm a huge breakfast guy, too. I actually just had a discussion with one of my fellow teachers this morning, and we were talking about how much we love breakfast and how breakfast for dinner, I mean, that just needs to happen at least once a week. I don't know if this counts, but I am such a big fan of chicken and waffles.
Yes, there you go. We want to talk South. Chicken and waffles, maybe some like cheese grits in there too. And the best thing that I would always get, because I used to, when I lived in Georgia, I would go to Waffle House at like 4 a.m. And I don't
mess with the Waffle House.
Sausage gravy and biscuits.
I'm down. Everything you guys are saying, I'm salivating.
Breakfast is just
here.
So good, and I feel like I miss it sometimes because I just don't want to get up early enough to eat breakfast.
Sometimes, back when I was living on my own, I would just do the real, welfare chicken and waffles, where it was like Lego Eggo waffles and like like breaded chicken strips.
Yeah, just chicken fingers you got frozen. Heat that up. Yeah, I used to do that too.
Yeah, but ever since I moved back home, now I got access to a waffle maker. So it's now it's Belgian waffles and actual
bread your chicken. Own chicken. Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Mm.
Sometimes my roommates go crazy.
That's good.
You guys are making me hungry.
We need to talk about food so much, man.
It's not. Yeah.
Yeah, I was gonna say Jerry's talking about before we get on the podcast, he's trying to do a gallon of water a day to slim down a little bit. Well, with lemon, but he's talking about his breakfast has a half pound to a pound of bacon.
See, the thing always for me, man, I could eat what I want, but like I would play basketball and or football. Yeah. I would play some type of sport twice a week. But since I jacked my knee up, I'm kind of sedentary, man. I gotta eat better. I could eat like crap and then just play basketball 2-3 times a week. But now I can't, so. I gotta eat right, man. It sucks.
Yeah, in my early 20s, I leaned very hard on my metabolism, which was like really, really good. I could eat like I used to order like Papa John's cheese sticks by like 2 boxes worth and eat them all, and I would be fine with just walking around the next day. And my metabolism's gone way down, so I just need to be mindful of that. But
something about hitting 30, man. I don't know.
I ain't 30 yet. It's getting close though. It's late for me, yeah. Let's get to a couple more because we're actually kind of running out of time here.
All right.
We got one question here about cap space versus draft. I'm not really. Let's get that one. I want to go to this question, which I actually it's from Single Digit, and it's one that actually. It's a question I think kind of goes back to what we were talking about, and it's some irrational hope, but just want to play the scenario. He asks, excuse me, I'm having my own troubles now. If the Lions, after starting 1-7, win their last 8, make the playoffs, and end up winning the Super Bowl, would that be the greatest story in the history of sports? Better than the Miracle on Ice? Better than the 6-9 Mets? The best ever?
No, nothing ever will eclipse the Miracle on Ice. I don't care if that's hockey bias, but like we had two nations that were at conflict with one another. That was I mean, come on.
Right, but I mean if you expand and look out, that narrative kind of played itself out several times with the Soviet Union, like Canada and a few times and
all right. And the other thing about that Soviet team, how bad did they come over here and just put a shellacking on the NHL All-Stars?
That's right. Yeah. Well, I was talking about that with the Summit Series. Canada ended up winning that Summit Series like about 10 years prior, but they got close.
Right. And also, can we talk about how many NHL players were actually on that Miracle on Ice team? Like, NHL players that made a difference?
Hold up, but were there? Because back in that day, like, no Americans played in the NHL because the NHL was, like, crazy xenophobic, and they believed that only Canadians were fit to play in the NHL.
I mean, the majority of the league were Canadian, but, I mean, you still had American hockey players. I mean, the only guy who went on to do anything was Ken Morrow. And, like, that, I mean, I don't know. Sorry, I had to go off on that tangent just because I think the Miracle on Ice is still the most incredible sports event in this nation's history. But
I mean, it would be something like, because we don't see that happen in the NFL, right? Like, I'm trying to think back. Like, you could probably point to a couple of wild cards that end up turning things around. Like, the New York Giants keep doing that, right? But I don't think they've ever had a start from a 1-7. And it's from a team that hasn't won anything since the 50s, right? And hasn't actually won a playoff game in how many years? And just to throw that all together, that would be, I think, like, that would be up there for the ages. There would be a 30 for 30 written about it, right?
No question.
Like, I mean, it would be up there with, like, say, the four nights in October, the Red Sox in 2004. Right when they came back from three down with the Yankees,
it would eclipse it, man.
What?
It would eclipse it.
Yeah. I wouldn't say eclipse it, but it would be on that level, right? This whole idea of what are the chances for this to happen. But I would say probably my favorite sports story, and the one that I said this wouldn't eclipse, would probably be Jim Valvano's NC State national champion basketball team, the Survive and Advance team that they were an outside stretch and they like rattled off, like, I don't remember how many wins, but they had to win like the entire ACC tournament to get in. And they had to beat that Virginia team with Ralph Sampson, and they had to beat Hakeem Olajuwon on the Houston team.
Yeah. They had to beat Phi Slamma Jamma.
Yeah. Yeah. And all of their wins came down to like the last seconds of that game, including the title itself. Like, I think that still takes the cake.
Guys, you had some admirable submissions, and those are great runners up. This would by far be the biggest story, the most talked about sports thing. It's so many aspects to this. For one, 2015, the proliferation of social media. So you have just so much access to players and fan reaction. Think of the number of fan videos that would be out, the memes, the Vines, Instagram. You had a firing of a president. You have this old 90-year-old female owner. It's the Lions, the whole curse of Bobby Lane, Matt Millen. I mean, it's so many aspects.
That's
of this
true.
Thing.
That's true. There would be a lot. I think, like, if there was any improbable team to win a title, like, the only one to do, like, that you could ask to take this role over the Lions would probably be, like, the Cubs. Right. And the Cubs have at least gotten close sometimes. The Lions, they haven't even sniffed it. Like, but it's.
I agree, Jerry. I mean, trust me, you would see a parade down Woodward. You'd be able to see Honolulu Blue.
A parade. We would just be, it wouldn't be a parade. It would be just a riot.
Yeah.
So many angles you can go with it, man.
Yeah,
so many different people.
Plus it's football
Calvin
too.
Calvin Johnson. You could tie in Barry Sanders. That would be an amazing movie. And I know we're definitely tainted as Lions fans. We're saying that. But, you know, I think it would be the biggest sports thing. Because I don't think a team has ever a team never has made the playoffs after 0-5 anyways. So much less to make the playoffs. And then you exercise your demon of Lambeau Field that year.
Plus, consider this year, who would they would be going up against? They would probably be going up against, like, a Carolina Panthers team that is being that is like historically dominant right now, and maybe
possibly undefeated.
What?
Possibly undefeated.
Be going up against this drudging defense, probably from the Arizona Cardinals. Maybe at some point, who knows? Who knows who comes out of the AFC? Maybe it's the Patriots. You know, this own team that's just been an unstoppable juggernaut. They would have to be going up against some real heavy hitters to make and win a Super Bowl.
And then too, and I mean, we're marking out now, but to even make the playoffs, guys, like, even if we went 9-7, you know how many cars would have to fall our way?
Everything.
You know,
yeah.
Every team would have to lose that last week. So you can add that into it too. Like, how improbable. And I know, you know, some people don't like to hear this. Even if we were to win out, we probably won't be making the playoffs because you got Seattle right there. And
yeah, Seattle winning on Sunday kind of closes the door.
Yeah, so even to make the playoffs would be so improbable. You'd be counting on like 6 or 7 games that last Sunday of the week. So it would just be crazy.
You know what would be actually, you know what? I just thought of something. You know who'd be what would be an amazing addition to this Lions story, to this whole playoff dream of winning a Super Bowl in this scenario?
What would that be, Chris?
John Cena!